Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Before we start this episode with Marlin, I wanted to let you know that we discuss some difficult topics, including suicide, abusive relationships, and baby loss. If you think you might find any of these too difficult to listen to, please choose another episode. Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Now, today I've got to say I am not in the studio and I am not stuck in a cupboard at home. I'm actually away on tour at the moment. I'm in a hotel. So please forgive me if there's any outside noise. There might be people in the corridor talking. There might be a siren outside. Who knows what might happen? But today's chat is super important. It should have happened in the studio a few weeks ago, but due to illness, it didn't happen. So we're making best of life and Zoom, and we're doing it remotely. Today's guest first appeared on our screens many moons ago in Love Island, and it has been incredible to see the journey that she has been on since. And I know that a lot of people hate the word journey, but for me and this person, it has definitely been a journey. She has become someone who talks about big topics in such a raw and honest way, whether we're talking about domestic violence, baby loss, the loss of a parent. And I know that in her approach, she spreads so much love, so much positivity, and so much hope. So it is an honour today to be talking to Marlin Anderson. Hello.
Oh, hello, thank you. Oh, I got a bit emotional hearing that. Thank you.
You do, though. Like, you know, I've been following you for a long, long time now, and it is actually incredible to see how you vocalise your thoughts and how you use your platform, because we both know that platforms like Instagram, whatever, they can be so self-indulgent. They can be a lot of nothing. They can be a lot of noise about nothing. Yeah. And actually, you use it in such a way that is so powerful. It's why it's, well, it's when it's at its best, when it is spreading, you know, such important messages. And you use it in such an amazing way.
Thank you. You know what? It's weird. I use it as like an online journal.
Yeah, so like therapy.
Whenever I want to post something, I don't just do it because I have to post or, oh, good, look, engagement's good at 6, let's post then.
Yeah.
I have to be in the mindset, and whatever's gone on that day or in the past week, or if I felt something, I'll flick to that topic and just write it out, you know, and yeah. I'll put some music on in the background, get my thought into like a meditative state, like my mind, and I'll just type away on my phone and be like, yeah, that's how I'm feeling, and I'll post it. That's literally it.
It is. It's like journaling, and it's a little bit of therapy, I think, when you get it out there like that.
Yeah.
I'm the same. I can't be like an 8 o'clock person that needs to get it out there one a day. If I'm not feeling it, I'm off.
Yeah.
And then when I'm there, you know.
That's so healthy, though. So healthy.
I think so.
Definitely.
I think so. And it also, I think it's looking at the platform in a different way, I think. How are you? Is everything good?
Yeah, everything's good. My little one's with her dad today, so I was like, all right, it's a me day. I went to the gym.
So you're talking to me?
Yeah. No. It's good. I watched, she'll be there in the background. I'll be like,
that's
no.
True.
So it's good. All is good.
How old is she now?
She's 13 months now. So she started walking about a month ago. Now she's running around everywhere.
And that is a different, that's different. When they start walking and they're able to move around, it's a different level.
Oh my God, she's opening things and leaving things in weird places. Like I opened the bin and found loads of toys in there. I was like, how is she doing that? And it's cute. So like I'm clearing up her toys now and she's not here. And I'm like, I found some ice cream scoop cart things in like the corner of my bedroom. I'm like, oh, she's been there. That's cute. But yeah, it's so bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, you're forever finding bits in different places. When they start putting things in a handbag and you're out and about and you pull things out, you're like, what is this?
I haven't had that yet.
Marlon, let's talk about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
So I was born in Sweden, a little village called Trollhättan. I'm trying to say it in the Swedish accent.
I mean, I'm sold. I don't speak Swedish, so it sounds good to me.
And My dad passed away when I was about 11 months old. So my mum took it upon her to move me and my two brothers and sisters to England. So I moved to England when I was about 3 years old. And they are, funnily enough, my first memories, playgroup and moving into a small village called Howton Conquest in Bedfordshire. So that was my childhood.
And what was that like, moving to a small village in Bedfordshire?
It was nice. It was a very typical kind of white village, if that makes sense. You know, I think I was the only Asian family there with my siblings, and there was a lot of racism that we endured growing up. And
I love it. You've just said it was nice. So we endured some casual racism.
And looking back, I was very naive to it because when you're a kid, you don't understand. I remember bringing home one of my friends that I'd made, and she went, "Your mum speaks so quickly, I don't understand." She said it to me, and I felt like, what? And so all that naivety and growing up, you're like a sponge, aren't you? So I became very aware to it quite quickly. And I think that led me to believe, you know, that this world isn't as nice as we think it is. And it kind of toughened me up from a young age. But yeah, no, the village was lovely. Just,
just some of the people in it. All right. I'll take that. And how were things at home? Like, did family life make you look ahead to the future and think of you as a mother? Like, what was your relationship like with your own mum?
Me and my mum had a really close bond. I was the youngest of four. She, you know, she spoiled me. I was her little girl. But there was a lot of sadness in my mum's life. She lost her husband when I was young. So I think I witnessed my mum being very depressed from a young age. I've never said this before, but I actually remember one of my memories when I was about five, that she tried to kill herself with toilet bleach. She didn't do it,
really?
But she was crying. And back then, mental health isn't a thing. So we didn't understand it. And I remember watching that. And that image is forever stuck in my head. And she was very sad. She'd take herself to bed quite early. And she just lived for her kids, essentially.
Yeah.
And that is when her cancer kicked in, when she was, I think, 50 years old. She got diagnosed with breast cancer. And I was only, 9 years old? So my childhood was essentially me watching my mum go in and out of hospital, be taken away at night sometimes, going through chemo. And I think the fear of losing loved ones started at such a young age for me, where that then enabled me to have really unhealthy codependent relationships with men, you know, because I just didn't want to lose anyone. So I took abuse. It's really deep, I'm sorry.
No. And it's good. I mean, I didn't expect anything else from this conversation, to be honest, Marlon. That's so, so much to take on. And actually, I wonder, as your daughter gets older, whether that will impact you in different ways, kind of going, gosh, when I was this age, like, you to see that age in front of you, I saw this. And I wonder if it will keep hitting you in a certain way, you know, as you get
definitely
older and as you
it's
see your
so
child.
Weird. You said that. I took her to some music class the other day and now she's walking. She was in the middle of the room. It was really busy. She didn't care. She was just like bopping up and down and laughing. And, you know, kids are so carefree and innocent and pure. And this is my world. So I want to make sure that everything that I've endured and any generational trauma that has been handed down to me from my parents' parents, I want to cut that cord now. And that's where all the inner work and the healing has had to be done. And yeah, I've endured some crap and some shit in my life, but it's essentially down to me to sort that out, no one else. And when I saw how innocent and cute she was just in her own little world, I thought, no, she's not going to experience anything that I've experienced. Like, I want her to remain like that. And obviously, in an ideal world, you know, we can't protect, like, you know, as we want, because it's a scary world out there.
And things happen, you know, much as we want to protect them from that, it's just impossible, you know, when it comes to things like death. Your daughter's already older than you were when you lost your dad.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, yeah, there's just, we can't shy away from those big things. And also, we're kind of doing them a disservice if we do shelter them too much. And it's really hard, isn't it? So how do you, you know, protect them from the harshness of the world, but also enlighten them enough so that they've got the tools to cope with things when they do happen?
Do you know what? It's a strange one, because I felt a lot of guilt when me and her dad split up. But it was better for her for it to not be an unhealthy relationship around her, and for her to have love from both parents, but not witness, you know, arguments and not a nice environment to be in. And that carried with me for a long time. And I tried to make things work, because I thought, I didn't have a dad growing up, and I didn't have that secure family unit. And that's all I want from her. But I think acceptance kicked in when I realized, no, it would never work with him. And she'll be so much more happier going to his 3 days a week, coming, you know, living at mine, staying overnight at mine, but seeing her dad 3 days a week. And it's something we don't ever want to do. We don't ever envision having to co-parent. We envision that
staying
with family.
And also society tells us that that's what family looks like. And actually, the reality is, it's healthier a lot of the time for that not to be the case.
Yeah, definitely. And she's the most happiest child ever. It's brilliant. So, yeah, lots of love for her.
Did you ever, when you were younger, look ahead to being older and having a family? Did you see yourself as a mum?
It's weird, right? When I used to be younger, I was such a weird kid. I'd play a lot on my own and be very imaginative. And I used to look in the mirror. And I remember, like, I used to look really geeky. I had a tash, fluffy, curly hair, glasses. And I used to be looking in the mirror and be like, oh, well, I don't know why, but Nicole Scherzinger was the thing for me. And I used to be like, I'm going to look like her when I'm older. I used to pose in front of the mirror and be like, I want to be famous when I'm older. And I don't know why or where it came from. And because I never stood out when I was a kid. I was very quiet, introvert. Still am introvert in certain ways now, but I lacked confidence and self-esteem. And I think I just wanted to change my image so much growing up that is when all that body image crap came through. But when I was younger, I just envisioned being cool and having it, like, you know, being noticed. And that's quite sad, actually, when you think about it.
Oh, it totally is. But I think there's so many different, you know, things put out to us in the media and different, you know, even the beauty industry, the fashion industry. There's so many different, there's so much noise going on that actually it's difficult to kind of focus on what is it that you actually want? Not all the stuff that you're being told that you want. What is it that will make you feel fulfilled?
Definitely.
You know. So in terms of parenthood, was there a point where your mind actually, I might like to go down that path? Or was it just kind of you're living life in the moment, not even thinking about it?
Yeah, I was always living life in the moment. And when I became pregnant with my first child, Concy, it was a really horrible relationship. But my mum had died 6 months before, so I thought this was a sign for me. And I thought, oh, you know, the universe is sending me a child. I'm going to call her Concy after my mum. And I'm going to live, she's going to live through her. So when she died as well, I was just like, huh? Maybe parenthood isn't for me. Maybe that's not where my path is calling me. But lo and behold, Zaya has completely changed my life and turned me into the best version of myself. You know, you just become so selfless. It's insane how much you give yourself. And you don't even care about it. You don't even mind. Whereas I used to, when I was single and loving life, I used to just go out, do whatever I wanted and there would be no consequences.
Yeah. So were things in your first pregnancy with Concy, were things already bad with your partner before you fell pregnant?
Yeah, there were warning signs after the first 2 months, I'd say. They were very slow, though, drip-fed. You know, I think gaslighting is usually like that. But when you become pregnant, you're like, oh, it's a sign. And I'm so, like, look to the stars for things, you know? That's me. It's always been me. And funnily enough, again, when I did become pregnant, the abuse got worse, which tends to happen a lot of the time. And, yeah, when she passed away, that was literally me thinking, okay, that was not meant to be at all whatsoever. And I kind of looked at her death as saving me from something that could have ended up maybe in my death, you know?
And the abuse got really bad even when you were heavily pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. I remember just being on high alert all the time. There were really stressful periods where I'd be wondering where he was and he'd randomly turn up drunk. He pushed me about into wardrobes a lot and on the floor. And I'm talking, I had a big bump at this point, what, 20 weeks or something. And I'd always check to see if she was moving. So when they did come and she had stopped moving in my stomach, my heart dropped so much and I instantly looked to him. I remember looking at him thinking, you're a bastard. Like, this is you. And, you know, the post-mortem will never bring up results and be like, this is due to domestic abuse. But come on now, you know, it was so unhealthy, the whole thing. And it's sad to think about, actually.
Well, and I think from the outside, people can kind of go, why didn't you just leave? Mm. Why didn't you just walk away from that situation? But we know it's not that simple. No. When, you know, emotionally, mentally, it's, you know, it's not as easy to just get up and go.
No, you become vulnerable and they make you feel like you really do need them. And in my situation, I had no parents left. I had friends, but they weren't very good friends after Love Island. I had really fake kind of even media
hanger-ons.
Friends. Yeah, clinger-ons and just people that took the piss out of me and used me, you know, and just wanted to kind of show off. So I felt very isolated.
And also if you're with people on a certain level that's quite superficial, to suddenly go to them with something that's actually massive and vulnerable, that's difficult to do. Yeah. if they aren't a stable
Definitely.
Friendship, a
yeah.
solid foundation.
Yeah, so I just kind of felt very alone. And looking back now, I think he made me feel that what he was doing was okay. And so I accepted it. And as I said, going back to my childhood, I think all I ever wanted was love. And I posted this on my stories yesterday. I think growing up without a father figure really does determine your view of men and what you accept. And you don't have that dad in your life to show you how you should be treated. And that's why I think it's so important for Zaya to have a really good relationship with her dad, you know?
Also, any childhood trauma has a massive effect.
100%.
You know, and it is about, I think, unpicking that as we go and being aware of it so we can see those patterns where they might pop up and help the future generations.
Definitely.
Not, you know. Yeah. So in that pregnancy, obviously, it was really, really tricky. How did you feel? I mean, tricky is a trivial word, but how did you feel heading towards your due date? Was there a moment, were you able to focus on that pregnancy and what was about to happen?
I wasn't really able to focus too much on the pregnancy. It was like I was living this kind of fake life online about how happy I was, but no one knew. So it felt like such a facade. Is that the word? Facade?
Yeah.
Facade, it just felt like a little kind of show. And no one knew what was actually really happening. So when it did become close to the due date, when did I have the emergency C-section? I think she was 7 months.
Right.
So that's 2 months. It's only 2 months early and she was a good weight. I think she was like 4-5 pounds.
And why did you have to, why was she delivered early?
She literally stopped moving in my stomach and I went in and they said her heartbeat is really irregular. She needs to come out now. So I was like, whoa. And then suddenly she's out and she's been taken away from me. I didn't even see her and she's been put in an incubator. And we got moved 3 times from Bedford to Luton and then Luton to Great Ormond Street, where I ended up
literally following the care.
Right. Yeah.
And what was it like meeting her?
It was surreal. I was in a wheelchair because of the C-section. And then I went downstairs in Luton Dunstable Hospital and I saw her in the incubator. But she was covered in tubes. And I was trying to look at her. And there was no, like, eye contact to me. She had beautiful eyes, but I instantly felt that something wasn't going to be right with it. You know, and I thought, why? Well, I can't even hold her. I didn't hold her at all. When she died, they tried to make me hold her. And I said, no, I won't take her away
really?
From me. Yeah. Well, I'm not holding her now. And it was really odd. Like, the whole thing was just so bizarre and so alien compared to what Zaya is like in my life.
Yeah.
You know, having a healthy pregnancy and having an unhealthy and a baby in the NICU. It's just, my heart goes out to all the mums that have to go through it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you feel so helpless.
Mm-hmm. And you're just not prepared at that point to have a baby, because you think you've told yourself you've got this 9 months to be prepared, and then you have this idea of what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
And then when it does happen, and it's in a way that you can't even hold your baby, yeah, you know, was there a feeling of support within the NICU department, of like parents coming together?
Not parents coming together. Everybody was in their own bubble. The staff are really, really good, because I remember saying, you know, I want to breastfeed. And so I'd be pumping and expressing, but they'd be keeping it in a bottle and putting it through the tube for her. So that was the oddest thing for me, because when she died, milk just kept coming out. And I remember sitting in the bath and just like looking at my kind of scar on my stomach, and then milk was just dripping out. And I just felt so like cold and empty. And I thought, what has just happened? Because your body has still produced the hormones. My hair was falling out. The milk was coming, you know, so many different things. And you think, God, you know, our bodies are capable of a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole process is insane.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the support like for you around that time? Because at this point, do you still have that facade up? Are you, you know, because obviously...
No, it dropped. I thought, well, after she died, I was like, fuck life, like, fuck everything. I'm just going to... That's when I started opening up and speaking so rawly. And that made me open up about other things that I've gone through. It was like something had just been lifted off of me. You know, this little cape, this superhero cape I was wearing. I was like, no, it's coming off. This is me. And I just, yeah, used Instagram as a journal, really.
And at that point, did you start moving away from the relationship with your ex?
I tried to. There was a lot of back and forth for a while. I'd block him and everything, and he'd find a way in. He'd find out. I moved 3 times. He'd smash the door in, find out where I lived. Until, like, the last time that I saw him, he broke my hand. Like, beaten me up. But I went to my friends. If I didn't go to my friends, I would have gone home and not told anyone. I went to my friends. She went, you're coming to hospital with me. We're telling the police. And he got arrested and charged. And that was a very long process. When you're having to go through court whilst you're grieving. And I don't think the death even registered for ages. It only registered when I became pregnant for Zaya. That's when I grieved and suffered with prenatal and postnatal depression.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. It brought up so much.
And I wonder if the grief for your mum as well must have... I wonder if that was all encapsulated in one.
Definitely.
Especially if you're kind of going, I'm pregnant, it's a little girl, I'm naming her after my mum. There's so much within that, you know. And we talk about... I think even when we talk about miscarriage as well, it's kind of that thing of you look ahead to what life will be and the significance of it, you know, looking at the stars. And actually when that breaks, there's so much that breaks along with that. I feel like it breaks a part of your soul.
Definitely. And so my pregnancy, that should have been so nice and fun with Zaya. Me and her dad were having fun. We moved in together. It was so healthy. I was depressed. I didn't want to leave bed.
Really?
I got put on antidepressants. My mind was awful, intrusive thoughts, anxiety every day, thinking that there was going to be blood when I'd go to the toilet, grieving over my mum. Oh, why isn't my mum here again for my pregnancy? She needs to be here to help me, support me. Is Zaya going to die like my other child? You know, it was just horrible.
But you've gone through massive traumas, you know, not just a single one, like repetitive traumas. Mm. So often we talk about mental health and we're like, we don't know why it happens. We don't know why we feel sad. But with you, there's clear markers as to why that would happen.
Mm. And then even when she was born, it was such a beautiful feeling, but I still didn't feel peace in my heart, because then I started to feel guilt about my other baby, you know? It was just so bizarre. And I think me and her dad broke up when she was about 2 months old, and that was very heavy on my heart. And there I was, navigating life as a new mum with a newborn on my own, essentially, because he wasn't going to have her overnight. She was a newborn. And if I didn't have my friends and my sister, I don't know, it was so difficult, but so rewarding. And I think she got to 6 months and I was like, yes, I've done it. You know, I can do this. I can exercise, take her for a walk in the pram, meal prep her food. And I was just, and so I'm on a roll now. I'm loving it. But we all have to go through that really hard stage in life, and no matter what it is. And it's that bit that will change you and make you into a better person. But it's so hard to see at the time.
How did you feel when you found out you were pregnant with Zaya? The initial...
I was over the moon. Like, I was buzzing. And me and her dad, we were really good friends for like 5 years. He was always chasing me, but I friend zoned him quite a lot. and I thought, oh, he'd be an amazing dad. And he is. He adores her. And yeah, I was just ecstatic. And she's exactly what I thought she was going to be. If not like a million times better. Like, I can't even describe it to you. It's just really? The best feeling, yeah.
And how was your birth?
That was a bit funny. She came exactly on her due date.
Did she? Yeah. That's so rare.
Yeah, exactly on her due date. But I was contracting, spent like 2 days in hospital, and then they were like, oh, emergency C-section, get her out. And I thought, exactly the same place where I gave birth to Concy, here I am with Zay, and I went, are you taking the piss? And I thought, why are you doing this to me? I was embracing myself for the push. And
Yeah.
But it was...
And that must have brought back a lot of memories well. So at that point where you're already feeling it's really emotional, really vulnerable and raw, you know, to be in that position where you have to birth a baby, you know, whatever way the baby's going to come out, and to then be somewhere that holds so many...
Yeah, it was exactly the same room. The doctor that navigated me through Concy's pregnancy was there. It was mental. Same midwife I had as Concy. It was all bizarre. And I thought, okay, Marlon, things are different this time. You've got Jared holding your hand, someone that loves you, loved you. You've got a healthy pregnancy and everything's going to be fine. And it was. But I was shaking and panicking.
I wonder if having the doctor and the midwife who knew, you know, your history, whether there was a bit of comfort in
that. Definitely, yeah. Because it means their eyes were open to even more. They knew exactly what was going on in my past, me. And it was so comforting, especially my midwife. She then found out about the domestic abuse and she was like, Marlon, you'd come in for your midwife appointments and I never even knew. She went, you know? And I went, I know, I wouldn't have told you. And she went, my heart was so sad when I saw it online. And she went... But we're here now, things are different. And it was just so uplifting to have someone that has known your journey, as you say.
And that's the big thing though, isn't it? Because I think when it comes to domestic violence and mental health, like, we put up a facade. We don't show it. And there's so many reasons for that. Because it has a hold over you, that person has a hold of you, your mental health has a hold over you. You're never going to drop those barriers until you're ready to show people, you know, and you know that's so tough to navigate.
Yeah, definitely.
So back in the delivery room, what was it like meeting Zaya for the first time?
So cute. She had a little bobble hat on, and Jared, they gave her to Jared, but he immediately brought her to me, put her on me, and I've got a picture, and she's literally on my chest, and I was, oh my gosh, she had a big full head of hair, black thick hair and chubby little face, massive eyebrows, because her dad has massive eyebrows. And I kind of laughed and I thought, aw.
It's all right, but your eyebrows are in, she's fine.
Yeah, exactly. But the worst thing is, like, I was like, why have I had a C-section? Because I can't even hold her properly. Like, you've got to ring the bell at night. I remember my first night and I was like, I just want to grab her. But it was so alien to me though, because how do you hold her? How do I feed? I'd never done this before, you know? And It was the weirdest feeling, but so beautiful. Yeah.
And did having Zaya almost make you feel closer to Concy?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I just see Concy as our older sister, like guiding her. There's a picture of Concy upstairs and I walked past the stairs, was there yesterday, and she went, ah? And it was pointing at her and I went, ah, there's your sister, you know? So it's a nice story that I'm going to tell her. Well, not that nice story, but, you know, it's a story that I'll tell her when she's older.
But in terms of, like, looking to the stars, you know,
exactly. to
look at these humans that have come before us as guidance, I think there's a lot of comfort to take from that.
Definitely, definitely.
And did you know you were having a girl?
I did, yes. I was weird. I just knew from the day dot that it was going to be another girl. There's a lot of feminine energy in my family,
right.
Like, you know, a lot of strong females. I thought, yeah, it's going to be a female. And Jared's side of the family, he has a huge family, like 4 brothers, a sister. They've all had boys.
Really?
All his nieces. And he's got one niece, but there's like 6 nephews or something crazy. And he's like 1 of 4 boys. And he was like, God, it's going to be a boy. He's like, it just is. And I went, no, it's going to be a girl.
And there you are. How long did you stay in hospital for?
Like two nights or 2 or 3, I can't really remember now.
And what was it like leaving the hospital?
you leave there and you're like, uh-oh, I'm in the real world now, you know, I'm going to do this alone. But Jared was brilliant because I couldn't move. He literally, he did the nights next to me because I couldn't get up, and he washed me. He changed my pads because I was bleeding. He was amazing. Honestly, can't fault the guy. But I was just so depressed.
Well, that's the thing. So your perinatal and postnatal depression, did they just kind of merge into one?
Yeah, it became one big blur, and I took it out on him, and it just became, I felt sorry for him, actually. I was literally like a psycho.
Well, so let's talk about it. You know, how did that manifest itself? What did your postnatal depression look like?
It was me feeling anxious, stressed, crying randomly, looking at Zaya, thinking, oh, my God, she's beautiful, she's mine. Oh, my God, she might die tomorrow. Am I doing this right? Where's my mum? Grieving over my mum. Not wanting to go out or not wanting anyone to come and meet her. Didn't want to see anyone. Wanting Jared to be with me all the time. Becoming very codependent. Where are you going? Why are you going out? I don't want to be on my own with Zaya. Being too scared to be on her own because I didn't think I was capable enough to look after her, even though I was fully. Breastfeeding, and then it became too much for me. I stopped after a week. I did like 8-9 days, and then I just decided to stop. Then there's a feeling of not being good enough because I didn't breastfeed. There's just so much, isn't there, involved in it? And there was just a collection of everything.
Did you talk to people about how you were feeling? Because I remember the post that you posted eventually to talk about it. But were you vocalising those thoughts to other people?
Not really, no. It's funny because people think you should have that happy ending and that you should be happy. And I almost felt selfish for sharing those feelings. And people were like, but you've had your rainbow, baby, you should be happy. And I hate that term because everyone is on their individual journey. You know, as you keep saying journey, it's so true. We are all on a different journey. No one's going to feel the same. And I just felt like, no, my followers are so happy that I've given birth. I'm not going to kind of ruin it for them. And that's how it's quite sad, really, isn't it? When you think of it, but it is what it is. And I think another thing was the way my body was feeling. I was the biggest I'd ever been, but very lethargic, lazy. My whole pregnancy was takeaways, eating healthy, but a lot of takeaways and comfort eating.
But then again, from the outside, you talk in a really body positive way, you know, about embracing your curves and who you are.
Yeah.
But again, on the inside, feeling sad about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So for me, it was sitting lethargic, feeling more depressed, lack of energy, just feeling really slumped and lazy. And I wanted to be strong. And I've always said I wanted to be strong mentally. And I've hated exercise. Like, I've never been into exercise. I love yoga and stuff like that. And I'm into meditation and walks and things and running. And I thought, I want to exercise. And it was the first time in my life I actually stuck with a PT. And I incorporated half an hour to 45 minutes, like 4 days a week with her. And so I've gradually lost weight and strengthened up. But I did it for my mind. And that is where the body positivity thing becomes very toxic in today's culture. Uh-huh. Because I think if you're thin or if you're skinny, that means that you're not body positive. Actually, it's the wrong meaning here.
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I completely and utterly agree. And, you know, I think we grew up in a time where exercise was to punish your body and to make you thin. And actually, the conversation has changed. It is as much for your mental... It's basically for your mental health. Mm. Going out for a run, I absolutely hate it. The best bit about going for a run is the end, when I've stopped.
Yeah.
And I can just say, I've done it! Because everything, all the pressures and everything that you feel in everyday life, they just kind of lift.
Disappear.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's such... And I do think it's... It is that thing online sometimes where, you know, there's this movement and it's all looking great. But actually, as soon as anyone changes in any way,
yes,
you're like, what are you doing here? Because you told me to embrace my curves and now you're changing your curves. But actually, they're not looking at the why or, you know, anything within that.
And suddenly,
it's so nuanced.
I become unrelatable to the people that were following me for body image. But luckily, a lot of my followers have been like, you've motivated me to start, you know, exercising and feeling stronger. And I think that saved me, in all honesty.
Really?
With Zaya, that took me out of my depression. I came off fluoxetine, I think, a month after she was born. And I went, no, I'm going to get the natural endorphins. I'm going to eat better. And I just instantly felt better. Mentally.
That switch is so hard though, isn't it? Because I do feel like sometimes you have to wait for that switch to kind of go, and I'm ready. Because if you're feeling forced, if you're seeing people online, like I can remember after giving birth, I think like a week later, I went out for a walk. I've spoken about this so much on the podcast, but I can remember seeing someone else out for a walk and being like, I'm going to go out for a walk. And then being out on a walk and literally feeling like my insides were about to fall out and being like, no, 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 it is not my time. Today is not my time. I need to just quickly walk back to my car, let myself heal, and then wait for my switch to go. And they all come for us at different times. But actually when we're, the problem isn't the fact that you're exercising and the fact that, you know, you're feeling differently about yourself. It's other people kind of being in a position where they aren't ready yet to feel that switch. And they will, and they'll feel empowered and, you know, they'll get it. But I think sometimes those messages hit maybe people at a time where they're not feeling great. So then they take it out on you.
I did a post yesterday about... I think I stood on some scales and I was holding Zaya, and the main theme of the caption was to, you know, when you're ready and when the time is right, exercise, but understand that you should be enjoying your first, you know, months or year with your child and not worrying about how you look like, because that's just bullshit. But whilst you are, this is the name of your podcast, whilst you're a happy mum, you're going to have a happy baby. And what made me happy was to exercise and to feel good. And that meant Zaya feeling good. I didn't want to be depressed around her, you know, and when I'm happy, she's just so freaking happy, and it's, and I can lift her up and I'm strong and I'm dancing with her and I'm moving, you know, and she's a nut job. She's running around, moving things, she was carrying my door weight the other day and I thought, what the heck? And she's flinging it across the room. I was like, what are you doing? And, but I just love having that energy for her, you know, and energy is the biggest thing. So
yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to your postnatal depression, at what point did you start putting more attention onto it, I guess, and kind of looking at it and kind of going, actually, this is something that I do need to address? Did you have to sit in it for a bit and wait for that moment?
I had to sit in it for a bit.
Which I also think sometimes is a little bit healthy. Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes those things, they need to be released, because otherwise they will just stay you.
They will manifest into things that you don't even want to know. They'll manifest into health problems, mental health problems. It'll affect relationships, people around you, career, work, everything. And we don't ever want to deal with emotional matters as humans. We put a cover on them, like a plaster on them. Even spirituality, that was a big part of my life. But I was turning to that and not dealing with the emotional issues. And when I started to deal with the emotional issues and feel my feelings, feel my emotions, feel the sadness, cry in the evening if I want to, that was, as you just said, the biggest release for me.
Yeah. And I imagine it was a super tough decision for you and Jared to go your separate ways as well. And that's got to have had a massive impact on both of you. And like we say, you know, we think that family life is going to look one way, and it's really hard when it doesn't become that. What is the key for you two moving forward in terms of Zaya?
It's hard, because I've never discussed him or posted him on my socials, because he's private. And for Zaya, when we've ever had an argument or we've split up, I will never badmouth him or say anything, because I will never want her to see that when she's older, because that's where some people in the public eye go wrong. You know, they'll bash people and then
it's all
going to
be there forever. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. The internet's a dangerous place. Yeah. And I think I very much love him. I love him to pieces, and he loves me, and we were good friends for a long time, and it just didn't work out as a relationship. But there's no saying no to the future, because we get on now and things are going nicely. And we do a lot together for Zaya. We've got her shoes measured. We'll take her to the zoo. We'll do bits and bobs. We know we'll take her for a walk down the road. He'll come around for dinner. So I think it's rebuilding that forced pressure, because I got pregnant really quickly again, you know? So it's taking a step back and fixing relationships and doing it properly, you know? And I can't be unhealed and dealing with trauma and putting it onto him. Same as him doing it to me. When we're both separate, working on ourselves, maybe one day in the future we can come back together. But the main priority is Zaya being happy, and she loves us both. She said daddy first, but I was told they would do that.
Yeah, I think it's just in the mouth. It's just easier. They've got to do so much more before the mama's made.
She started calling, like, I think it was like the Hoover dada, and I was like, oh, that was bullshit.
It means nothing. Sorry, Jared. Means nothing. One thing you have been honest about as well, actually, is, and I do think this is a new mum thing as well, and I think it's something that happens whether you have a partner at home or not, or you live with other people, is the loneliness. And I think that also comes with, you know, the loss of identity, or that's kind of waiting to discover this new version of you. And I do think, you know, I've said this a lot, that you have to evolve. You have to go through life and experience things and evolve. Otherwise, you're a right plonker. You know, you can't stay stationary in your thought and your feelings and your emotions. You have to have that all touch you in some way. But I think in those early stages of motherhood, it's all kind of settling and everything's up in the air. But for you, you have touched on loneliness and evenings, you know, that are particularly hard when your baby's in bed and you are other room watching TV, and, you know, it's an odd place to be.
It's weird you said that, because it's been a running theme in my life, loneliness. From when I was a little kid and my mum would be rushing to hospital and I'd be in my bedroom, you know, maybe my older brother was there, and I'd be like, you know. And then when I was single after Tom, and spending 3 years during COVID and after the loss of my child, living on my own in an apartment and being very alone and seeking external things to make me happy, maybe going for drinks, partying too much, shopping, and trying to keep myself busy because I didn't want to face being alone. Even seeking the wrong men as well. And I thought, Zaya, she's completely made me unalone. But we are individual humans, and she is her own human. When she's asleep, I'm then alone. So what I've started doing is trying to fulfill my soul with things that really lift me up and attract good things into my life. So I'll now paint in the evenings.
What do you paint? I've not seen any of your paintings.
I don't post any of them, but I painted a spirit the other day. You know, things that come into my mind and different things. And then I'll what else do I do? I write sometimes, I journal. I do a lot of meditating, but I love reading as well. And I've been trying to do wholesome things and understand that loneliness gives my mind a break from when's her next feed, what am I making her, where am I taking her today? Oh, I need to change her nappy. And that's what we don't like facing, our mind being just still. And that's so healthy for it to be still.
There's a lovely thing about stillness.
Yeah.
There is. When I'm on book tours and I get to hotels, I literally just sit on the bed. I don't put the TV on. I don't put the light on. I don't listen to music. I just sit. Just sit. And it is something that I look forward to. I think that's the only reason why I keep writing books, just for the book tour, just to sit with nothing on the bed. But there's also a difference, I think, between being alone and being lonely, because you can be surrounded by people and be lonely.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's an internal part of you that, again, needs addressing. Because if you feel lonely around a lot of people, it's something that you need to work on, that's deep rooted, that you need to take the layers apart from and try and find out and understand why. And I think for me, the loneliness was, I was craving a partner and someone to love me and someone to love and to have that, because my mum's house, when it got sold, immediately that family unit space that I'd go to all the time and visit, see my mum and my stepdad would be there and the dog would be there, has gone. So I think that was when I became wholesome in myself and loved myself as much as I could. I then understood I don't need anyone else to give me that love. I'm giving myself love. But we're humans. We love connection, right?
Yeah.
We're put on this earth to connect with others and to be in a relationship and to have friends, because that's how we thrive. And I think having a really good circle around you is the best thing.
Mm. But there is shifting that focus, because I also think that growing up, you think about the Disney films that we used to watch growing up, it's all about finding your Prince Charming. It's all about falling in love. And I know the narrative has changed massively over recent years, which is fascinating. We're like Frozen about the, you know, Cicely Bond or whatever it is, about Maleficent and about different types of love that enter your life. But we are conditioned to, that is when we'll be fulfilled, when we find the person who looks at us and goes, I love you. You know, but actually, what we've got to do is look in the mirror and go, I love you.
Yeah.
You know, and that is a massive, massive shift that in some ways it is happening, and it's great to see that, but it is something that kind of lives inside of us.
It's interesting because Gabor Maté, is that his name? I don't know if I ever pronounce it right. Gabor Maté.
I'm going to take it. I'll take it. I don't
he's
know.
A really like influential speaker. He's brilliant. You'll see him up and around. I think Fern.
Oh, yes. He's recently been on her podcast. Yeah, I've seen clips.
Yeah, on Stephen's podcast. He has glasses, you know, he's really wise. He says, you know, why are we forever changing ourselves to be loved? Whether it's how we look, we feel we have to look a certain way, act a certain way. But when we meet that person that we're eventually, that's going to be right for us, we can be our fullest, wholesome self without needing to change any part of ourselves. But yet we're there going to the gym and putting makeup on and for a date, for instance, I'm going to need to get somebody to look this. We're altering who we are to try and get that person to love us.
Yeah.
That should never be the case.
Yeah. From day one.
It's just...
Can you remember about 2 decades ago, there was a book called The Rules that basically told you did not see that. It was a dating book. I think it might have been referenced. It was kind of like a Sex and City time. And it basically told you all the things that you had to do in order to get that guy to propose, in order for him to be the one.
Wow.
It's like, so, you know, I do think that, you know, we are a generation who have been told we have to act in a certain way. You know, and you can't deviate from that. But you will eventually, because eventually they're going to see you in your comfy pyjamas, not the sexy slinky thing, the comfy pyjamas with no makeup on and your hair a mess.
But that's when relationships start to break down, because you weren't you to begin with, and you didn't get to know each other in your authentic self. And that's why toxicity then evolves and arguments erupt and you don't actually know who you're with. And... yeah, it's an interesting
and resentment thing builds as well, because you feel like you're having to be a certain way, or you might have done things at the start and you're like, actually, you've got to pull your weight, so you've got to do that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and you've been running it as far away from yourself as possible.
Yeah.
Only to realise that you should have just been yourself to begin with.
That's hard though, isn't it? I wonder if that's also something that comes with age. Just like, yeah, I am what I am, so. You know, this is me.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. If you could write a letter on motherhood, who would it be to and what would you say?
Oh, gosh. A letter on motherhood. It'd probably be to Zaya. It'd be to Zaya, and I would pen down everything that I've endured from the minute she was in my stomach and all my feelings and emotions and how much she has changed my life. And how difficult it's been, but how much strength she's given me. And I'd want her to read that when she's older, definitely, for sure. Because I think, you know, people have kids and stuff, and we get so lost in the bringing them up and being a mum that we forget the emotions and the feelings of how much they have made us evolve into. Like, she's changed me completely as a person. I'm just the best version of myself since having her. It's insane.
You seem really sort of settled and grounded and, you know, really in tune with, like, who you are and what you want.
Thank you.
It's lovely. Has having Zaya made you think about your own mum a lot more?
Yeah, in a sense of I'd love her to meet her grandma. I wish my mum was here to tell me, no, you know, don't change a nappy like that, or this cream is good to use. You know,
Oh,
I'll have her. You go out for an hour. I've not had that. I don't have anyone that can just have her for an hour unless it's my best friend that I trust, or my sister, you know, and that's difficult. I can't just pop down the road and get my nails done quickly. And that's why I envy Jared. He lives with his mum and he just can power off to his mum easily. Mum, I'm going to the toilet. Look after her for 5 minutes. I've got to get a baby gate up, you know, put her in a safe space. And if I don't do that, she'll be on me. I'm there on the shitter and she's trying to climb on me. And I'm like, get off.
Which is fine if you've got, you know, slight runs and it happens very quickly. But if
she dropped something in the toilet, though, the other day. And I'm like, whoa, what are you doing?
Oh, no.
I don't know. But anyway, you know, you just feel, oh, but.
How are you feeling about the chapters and the milestones ahead of you? Like, are you going to put her into nursery at any point? You know, school, like, there's so much ahead of you.
Yeah, oh, my God, I haven't even thought of that yet. The walk-ins just kind of, like, took me by surprise. But I think nursery when she's 2 or something. And then school, I don't know if I want home tutoring or not. I don't know if I kind of agree with certain schooling. Maybe lower school is fine.
Were you homeschooled at all?
No, I went to mainstream school.
But it's interesting. I imagine, like, your experience of school as well has probably shifted how you think, you know, your child,
definitely.
You know.
Yeah, I think racism, bullying, body image, friends, but also what they teach at schools. I don't really entirely agree with things that I don't think they teach enough real life stuff, you know, and especially empowering people to take on their own kind of careers and own businesses. I was very much told to work that 9 to 5 and that's, you know, and be working for someone. I remember that growing up.
And living for the weekend. You know, you spend your whole life.
Oh my God, exactly. Yeah.
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 I mean, it's a minefield. But I love the fact that you're thinking about possibly homeschooling.
Yeah. But that means lots of activities, like, you know, taking her to bloody everything. You know, different groups.
Well,
and
how
stuff,
are you coping with, like, parent groups? Like, have you done any?
Yeah, I have. I've done loads. But, you know, I'm so, like, introvert and weird sometimes. I'm kind of there and, like, using Zaya as an scapegoat, like, playing with her.
Just talking to her, and, you know, not looking
around
the
room. And I'm not very mumsy like that. I don't know if mumsy is even a thing, but they're all very like, let's go for coffee. And I'm just there as soon as it finishes, like, get her in the car and go home. But it's so good for her to meet other babies, kids, and just mingle. So it's all for her, really.
Yeah. And finally, I would love you to complete 3 sentences. The first one is, being a mum means.
Oh, being a mum means strength and determination.
Since having children, I
have evolved considerably.
And I'm happy when
Zaya's asleep. And I get to have my me time.
I like that. I saw a post yesterday that I shared that said something like, I know that when it was something along the lines of, I know I should go to bed early and make the most of getting sleep. However, when my child is asleep, that time before going to bed is the only time that is my me time.
That's what I battle with. It's either bed at 8 o'clock because she might wake me up at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Or, no, this is my
stretch
time.
Stretch out till midnight.
It's the catch 22.
It totally is, but it just really made me chuckle because I felt like I was the only one that did that. And I'm like, no, it's so true. So true. Marlon, you say that positivity is your superpower. How do you stay so positive? You know, what is it that just kind of makes you look for that in life?
Honestly, when I'm driving, I'll look up at the clouds, look at the sun, I'll look at what's around me, and I'll just think of things that I'm actually grateful for. Because if you don't look for what you've got or what you've currently got, you're always going to be seeking something that isn't there. And that's looking to the past or the future. You have to be very present and in the moment, which is hard to do living in the world full of busyness and horrible news and, you know, money problems or whatever the media want to throw at you. I think just being present and remaining grateful, that's literally how I've done it.
And because obviously talking about your experiences is such a large part of you at the moment, you know, you talk about them and in terms of positivity as well, you know, how is that? Because you must want to look forward and ahead at life, but also what's come before is such a massive part of who you are, you know, but it must be difficult so often to talk about those experiences.
Yeah, it's weird because I had a podcast with Jess Phillips the other day and she was speaking about domestic abuse. And then I spoke about domestic abuse again the other week with another podcast. And I was thinking, oh my God, not again. And then I thought, I've got this really good kind of sensory in my brain where as soon as I come off this podcast to you, I can just go and get on about my day.
Compartmentalize.
Whereas before, but before it'd be like therapy speaking about it and bring up a lot. But I've dealt with it so well now and done the inner work where it doesn't affect me, and what I want is to do is to help others.
Yeah,
and that
absolutely
actually brings back healing for me.
Yeah,
knowing that it can help with just even one person.
Because you know that there'll be people out there that don't have their voice, they can't vocalise what they're going through, but actually you sharing it might just be the thing that helps them. So
definitely.
Thank you, Marlon. Thank you so much for having this chat and everything that you do. Like I said at the top, I think you're amazing. So keep doing
what you're
doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.